Whoever you are, wherever you have come from, whomever you love, we welcome you. I am Mac Geckler, one of today's worship leaders. I am joined by Carolyn Arnold and Paulette Thurman. We are members of the Social Justice Committee. Lay-led services are a time-honored Unitarian Universalist tradition. We believe that Sunday service is best reflected in a variety of voices and experiences. We're glad to have you this morning. We hope you find something in this service today that nourishes your spirit and helps you find and keep your balance. Our minister, Reverend Melissa Carville-Zeamer, will be back in the pulpit next week.
Just as the Second World War was about to start, Unitarian minister, Reverend Waitstill Sharp, and his wife, Martha, journeyed to Prague with the express purpose to try and get as many Jews, Unitarians, and others deemed undesirable out of harm's way using any possible ruse. Later, they went to Vichy, France, again doing this dangerous work. They needed a symbol and a name for this effort. Thus was born the Unitarian Service Committee and the Flaming Chalice. The Unitarians quickly adopted this symbol. The Universalists were using a circle with an offset cross at that time. 50 years ago, when the denominations merged, they created a new symbol, two circles with an offset flaming chalice, roughly in the shape of a cross. This symbol tells the world that we are justice seekers at our very core.
The call to worship today is from a letter I wrote on September 26, 1969, for your benefit, the SDS was the much feared and hated Students for a Democratic Society. The SDS is demanding that the UU Church reopen the Yellow Unicorn, closed because the SDS didn't pay their NORCA bill. And if they push too hard, my father feels, and I agree, that the church will just collapse. People around here are really uptight about the students in general, the SDS in particular. Of course, the SDS cause wasn't helped much by the kid who appeared on Cleveland TV and announced that the SDS was communist. I have been working on a church committee trying to get the Yellow Unicorn reopened. At the last meeting, the SDS kids didn't turn up. There are at least two and maybe three factions of the SDS, each claiming to be the only one on campus. Many church members are against the SDS because they advocate violence, i.e., action, to change the way the world is. But it seems to me that these are the church members who see nothing wrong with the use of violence, that is, police action, to maintain law and order. I'm beginning to wonder if many Protestant churches remain viable by staying out of everything controversial or important that is going on. I became active with the First Unitarian Church of Columbus in the early 1960s. I was then an instructor at the Ohio State School of Music and played in the Columbus Symphony and was attracted to the music programs at the Unitarian Church. At that time, the John Birch Society was rampant in Columbus and had persuaded the OSU trustees to enact a gag rule preventing communists and other subversives from speaking on campus. The liberals of the Unitarian Church frequently hosted those speakers. I was married at First Unitarian in 1962. In 1965, we moved to Cleveland with our two very young children while my husband was completing his graduate study at the Cleveland Museum of Art. I took a job teaching speech, debate, and drama at the prestigious private Hathaway Brown School for Girls. In 1967, with my marriage unraveling, I returned to Kent and promptly looked up the Kent UU Church where Peter Richardson was minister. My father, I had grown up in Kent, and my parents lived here, and my father was, in fact, becoming active with this church at that time. The next year, Kent and Ravenna were rocked with outrage when the Cleveland Clinic moved to seize the small home of a black family in Ravenna in payment of a bill for treating the mother for liver cancer. The good people of Ravenna rose up and held bake sales, block parties, and raffles to help pay the bill. And the woman's son quit high school to work in the family junk business to try to save his family home. The woman died, of course, but the home was finally saved, probably because the Cleveland Clinic didn't want to look bad. One of my star students at Hathaway Brown School was the daughter of the then head of Cleveland Clinic. The spectacle of a black youth being deprived of his education while a wealthy doctor kept his daughter in a private school broke through my disconnectedness and left me with an inconvenient sense of responsibility for the world I live in. I quit at Hathaway Brown School and took a position teaching Head Start in Twinsburg for the school year 69-70. As the selection I read at the beginning of this service indicates, I had become active in this church. At that time, Jean Weninger was moderator, and the membership was small, perhaps 50 active families, about a quarter of them older Universalists who had supported John Flint's liberal, non-union-friendly theology, and three-quarters younger families mostly associated with the university. Leaders of the church were also active with early environmental initiatives, and the church basement then hosted organizational meetings of the Kent Environmental Council, draft counseling sessions, and the Students for Democratic Society Coffee House, the Yellow Unicorn. In January of 1970, the church hired Bill Schultz, a pre-theology student at Oberlin College, to serve as minister. Bill provided leadership and practical actions for the church after May 4th, but more importantly, his involvement with this church at that time changed his life and contributed to his outstanding career, including heading Amnesty International USA, the UUA, and the UUSC. In the wake of the shooting, Schultz and the leaders of this church were open to students who wanted to protest or participate in rebuilding community. A food co-op was started on Fridays in the basement. I and a number of other church members were active participants. The church women started a babysitting co-op, which rapidly grew into a full-time banking project with people swapping music lessons, lawn care, garden tilling, sewing, and other projects. After about 4 years, the organizers of the food co-op were graduating or moving on. Some tried to get the church to take over the co-op, but we resisted, and the co-op became Kent Natural Foods in a storefront downtown where it still exists today. As a church, we decided to withhold the federal tax on the church's phone bill that we believed was supporting the Vietnam War. Nothing happened, but a few church members dropped away. In the subsequent 10 years, the membership of the church changed significantly. For young professors and administrators, Kent State was not a star in their resumes, nor a comfortable position in a conservative administration seeking money and students. Some left teaching entirely, others found jobs elsewhere in academia. As a church, we were small then and poor. We had barely 60 members. We couldn't offer more than $10,000 a year to a new minister. We joined forces with the Canton Fellowship to sweeten that a little, but it was still far short of what we knew we should pay to a professional with a family. We quickly learned that women ministers were again coming on the market, and they were cheaper than men. And so the Reverend Vi Kochendorfer came to Kent in 1972. The church was then not only somewhat rudderless and unfocused and nearly penniless, it was literally physically falling apart. Vi went quickly to work persuading people to contribute money to repair and restore this building. She raised over $20,000 to renovate the kitchen and remodel the sanctuary, and she raised awareness of the importance of long-range planning and capital improvements. More importantly, in the 5 years she was here, Vi mended the fences that had kept our ministers out of the Kent Ministerial Association and became not only their first woman member, but also, she asserted, their token atheist. She provided authoritative leadership in our church and community on important issues like death and dying, sexuality, and gay rights. Vi studied and preached to this congregation on Islam and the Quran, and she was the first woman minister ever to preach at St. Patrick's Church in Kent. She also worked extensively with the Lutheran and Methodist ministers in town and taught in the experimental colleges at Kent State. Her leadership on issues of social justice brought new liberal-minded academics into the church. Despite that, in the economic downturn of the early 80s, the church membership shrank even more. I was elected moderator, and we could afford only a part-time minister. Politically, with the Reagan administration stoking what would become Iran-Contra, our focus turned to the plight of refugees fleeing repressive dictatorships in Central America and the infiltration of some Arizona churches by the FBI. An ecumenical group started meeting here and talking about how we might help. The challenge we chose was getting refugees from the Mexican border to Canada, which offered them asylum without their being deported by U.S. immigration authorities. At that time, the kitchen and bathroom that had been part of the apartment where the minister had lived during the Depression were still intact, and we thought those rooms could be a sanctuary in which refugees could live safely until they could get to Canada. As things turned out, refugees never actually lived in the church. But Ed Truitt spearheaded the organization of a coalition for sanctuary. A major consideration then was whether individual members of a group governed by majority rule could be held legally liable for the actions of the group. I undertook to write a constitution and bylaws on consensual principles to address the problems of liability under majority rule. Among other things, it separated members and attenders so people who were afraid of prosecution could participate but not be held responsible. Church members Olive Hobbs, Tom Myers, Ann Hastings, Ted Vanita, and I were early members. By midsummer, there were 15 members and plus over 20 attenders, including people from the UCC, the Presbyterian Church, and the United Christian Ministries on campus. The sanctuary group has been very successful and is still meeting now at the UCC. In 28 years, they have assisted nearly 30 refugees to asylum in Canada or residency here in the U.S. And under Ted Vanita's current leadership, it remains politically active on behalf of immigrants, immigration law, and national policies toward Latin America. As many of you know, my involvement with this church has a large hole in it between 1985 and 1997, when I served on the staff of Senator John Glenn in Washington and Cleveland. After I retired, I started writing an op-ed column for the Record Courier dealing with issues of social and environmental justice. The Common Dreams .org website has posted over 100 of these columns, including many about the Kent community, this church, and May 4th. I gradually became active again with the church, also with the Kent Environmental Council, Kent Social Services, and the County Clothing Center. After 9/11, I helped organize several anti-war activities, and in 2004, the Social Justice Committee was activated or reactivated. Vivian Sandlin, the Gecklers, Christina Spouty have chaired the committee, and Sally Burnell has recently taken over from me. The insert in your program contains an overview of our congregation's recent activities on behalf of social justice. It is a record we can be proud of and a solid place to stand as we face local and global injustices of war, inequality, corporatism, resource depletion, and global warming.
I've been a member of Social Justice Committee for years without ever actually participating in it. I would get the meeting agendas and the meeting minutes and mostly felt guilty that I do nothing about the issues I follow and have plenty of strong feelings about. Well, when Caroline asked me to join her and Mac in presenting this service, the timing couldn't have been better because the Occupy movement was brand new then, and I was feeling the same guilt there. Clearly, the gods and goddesses of righteous protest were calling. So, not wanting to say no to someone whose political writings I've admired for so long, I said, okay, all the while thinking, really? Does this make any sense? I'm just going to jump in and do this when I haven't been active in this group? I started attending the monthly meetings. I've now been to 3 of them and have volunteered to be the secretary. I record the minutes. This is what I want to share about this group of intrepid UUs. These are people who know how to get things done. They've been in the trenches with economic and social justice issues for years and years, as we just heard. So many years, in fact, that they're becoming a little concerned about the future of the group. So I'm here to appeal, and they didn't ask me to do this, to appeal to anyone else among us feeling discontent over what they know and how they feel about what they know and what they're actually doing about it. We're all busy. Our lives are filled up. And yet I have found that there are plenty of simple, quick things one can do, and it really is true. Every effort counts. Every petition, every rally, every conversation, every letter to the editor, every letter to city council, the representatives and senators in Columbus and Washington, it all matters. Probably I'm not the only member of this church, or maybe I am, who has this predicament of political awareness and political inertia. Or maybe it's just overwhelm, too many issues and too complicated. But what I'm finding is that with the structure and camaraderie of the group, I can be more functional in this arena. I, too, can get things done. In my brief time with Social Justice Committee, this is what's gone on. Caroline stepped down after 3 years as chair, which she just mentioned, and Sally Burnell has stepped up into that position. Sally is especially concerned with issues of local poverty and how we can help. The committee has an interest in doing more to promote the development of the Kent Community Time Bank, as well as Empower Portage. The Time Bank is an alternative economy in which members earn time dollars for services they provide, which they can then exchange with any other members for the services they offer. It's a great community builder, and some of us here have already joined. Empower Portage helps people find ladders out of poverty, and Sally is exploring what we can do to support them. Social Justice Committee is holding a potluck January 20th, followed by a showing of the healthcare movie. You can look for it in the thread. This is another one of Sally's pet projects, to return to the potluck and movie activity popular in the past. We get guests at times. A young man with a campaign for the Ohio Medical Cannabis Act of 2012 spoke to us and circulated a petition, which we all signed. Another guest, Mary Greer of Shalersville, whose property is now surrounded by neighboring properties leased to the hydraulic gas fracking industry, spoke of upcoming events addressing the denial of human rights, not just the imposition of fracking, and what can legally be done about that. Committee members Ted and Swanee Vanida make regular reports on fracking developments. They're also busy with Kent Environmental Council and many other churches, gathering and distributing information, lecturing and testifying everywhere possible. Bonnie Graham is looking into the possibility of our having a collection box in the church kitchen for used dishes, pots and pans, and silverware to be made available to people coming out of shelter houses and often needing everything. Bonnie also keeps the committee's financial records. Sally hopes to hold a community meeting on the topic of predatory lending and is looking for a speaker. Saunas Parsons continues the fair trade coffee, tea, and chocolate sales, which are a good, steady fundraiser for the group. Mark Stevens attends the meetings and lends his support wherever possible. Kathy Weiland and Martha Kluth volunteer at the County Clothing Center on the second and fourth Wednesday of each month, with Deb Newberry coordinating our team. I also need to mention that since they began, there have been over 50 special collections, with recipients receiving over $15,000 just from May of 2010 to May of 2011. So you see, this is a busy little group. I hope some of you will consider joining us. We only meet once a month, and with the exception of Caroline, we don't bite.
At this time, I invite you to pass the offertory baskets. Please take one as it's passed to you, and as you handle it, consider the contributions you have made and can make financially and with your time and talents toward making a difference in the world. If you are a guest, we invite you to take a candle from the basket as our gift to you. Today, we have our monthly special offering. This time, we are giving to Heifer International, which distributes seeds and animals to rural poor folks to help these people live sustainably. Please make your check payable to U Church of Kent with Heifer International noted on the memo line of your check, or you may use the pew envelope to check in the special collection box. Thank you. I came late to U-ism. After Tina, my first wife, died in 1990, I went in search of God, which eventually evolved into me writing my own theology. In late 1993, I met Susan on an echo tour in Costa Rica, and amongst our long discussions, I mentioned that no reasonable church would have anything to do with somebody who wrote their own theology. As a third generation U, she assured me that there was a place for me. My first church was the Church of the Larger Fellowship. This is a U church without walls, actually a newsletter church. Susan and I made an historic trip to Africa in 1995, which sealed our relationship. Later that year, we were married, And upon my return to work, I found that all our jobs had gone to China. This is the second time it happened to me. After a brief time with Susan in Atlanta, I moved to El Paso and joined the U community of El Paso. A year later, I was on the board as social justice chair. Canton is not the only church that asks newcomers to become leaders. But again, the business disappeared, and in 1997, I moved to Lafayette, Indiana. At the same time, Susan moved to Kent. I joined the U Church of Lafayette, who, interestingly, like us, had outgrown their space. Sadly, at work, I found out that the books were being cooked. And as CEO, my ethos could not allow me to remain. I could not be party to a lie. Being tired of being married and living apart, I moved to Ohio to be with Susan and joined this church. My UUism is driven by my need to try to make the world a better place, even if very small increments. My ethical existence requires me to walk away from business practices that are not fully transparent. As jobs were disappearing and business ethics were hitting an all-time low, I retired myself early to grow orchids, build steam engines, and become a house husband, happy to trade my suite of offices for the kitchen and laundry room. Besides social justice, I like UUism because of how it works. Our basic UU governance structure is non-hierarchical, congregational. This, coupled with our culture that informs us that all are created equal, gives us a member-friendly, user-friendly environment prone to bottom-up leadership. If you have a great idea for a children's program based on Harry Potter books, you'll be encouraged and supported. And next month, we don our wizard hats, and under Becky Haynes' guidance, we make magic again with our wee wizards. Our congregation casts a large shadow in our community and within our denomination. This is due to the actions of this church and individual efforts of some of its members. We are well known for our social justice and have been for many decades. Today you have heard much about this, and now we home in on the great work at the denominational level and where our social justice is now. Our dear Reverend Melissa was a key player in negotiating the Phoenix Justice General Assembly Compromise. In 2010, Arizona decided to impose a very nasty immigration law. And we were at odds of whether we should have General Assembly in Phoenix in 2012 or not. Melissa represented UU's Allies for Racial Equity. This is a group that helps whites confront their privilege while being accountable to people of color. It is quite common here to reward good work with more responsibility, as Melissa is now the president-elect of this group. My dear Susan is a member of our association's Commission on Social Witness. This independent group helps congregations formulate social justice public policy and facilitate social justice action by our members. The denomination's Board of Trustees felt that the Commission's process for generating public witness statements took up way too much time, and asked our denomination's governing body, the delegates from our congregations, to eliminate this witness process, and the delegates said no. We are justice-seeking people, and our people do govern. Becky Haynes gave me a t-shirt emblazoned with, "If the people lead, the leaders will follow." When Reverend Sinkford, our association president, saw me wearing this, he gestured to it with a loud amen. This is who we are. Our congregation has had a major impact on social justice public policy statements. An example, the Alternative to the War on Drugs statement was amended in its final form with half the changes coming from Kent. When we were working on a program to create a culture of peace within our denomination, the question was asked, how are you going to keep this going after the policy statement is agreed to and the denomination moves on to something else? We could, I said, create a group and keep the congregation moving and involving them in peace. We did, and the UU Peace Ministry Network was born. Any one of us, including me, can take up the torch of justice. This last year, my UUs for Alternative Death Penalty Board colleagues voted me president. As our aging founders request, good work seems to get you more and more work. Our chalice lighting this morning gave us the history of our flaming chalice and also described the origin of our UU service committee, which we will be collecting boxes for next Sunday. For the second time, I'm the district coordinator for the service committee, and our Vivian Sandlin is your local service committee representative. This year, Time magazine named the person of the year the protester, which looks and sounds a lot like us. Walking through our parking lot, you can readily see what we stand for just by reading all the bumper stickers. At various times, we have hung banners on the front of the church, including standing on the side of love, health care for all, and even a rainbow ribbon. We gather on the steps and bang pots and pans in memory of Molly Ivins. This coming June at General Assembly, you will see a significant protest with most of our people wearing yellow, standing inside love t-shirts. You're much more likely to see a protest t-shirt worn here during services than dress clothes. Our congregation has been through many trials and tribulations, but has always survived and continued to serve the community. Now we're faced with another inflection point, a good problem this time. We have long discussed that we will run out of room, and now we have. I'm sure we will move forward, expand our space, and embrace additional membership, as our mission and vision tells us to do. This is good news indeed. With more membership, we can be a bigger force for good here in our community. As we move down this new path, we'll be able to pursue some social justice objectives we have wanted to do, including becoming a green sanctuary. Also, we can move forward with updating our pledge to the community and ourselves to becoming a better, welcoming congregation. We may even look at a personal favorite of mine and becoming a peace advocate church. Will we be continued to be a force for social justice well into the future? Our history and traditions do give us a window to view this future with. My prediction, long after I'm gone, the babies that were born here last year will be doing social justice here, likely better than we do it now.
People say, what is the sense of our small effort? They cannot see that we must lay one brick at a time, take one step at a time. A pebble cast into a pond causes ripples that spread in all directions. Each one of our thoughts, words, and deeds is like that. No one has a right to sit down and feel hopeless. There's too much work to do.